Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin? And how did they end? Let's find out on this episode of Fan of History. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Bernie. I think I have been thinking about recording this episode for 10 years. This is like such an obvious story that Fan of History would eventually reach. And here we are.
Yeah.
And we are doing Cyrus versus Croesus.
It's amazing. And I've been thinking of it too. And I'm like, I have to be honest, dear listeners, I'm a little nervous because I know this story and I really want to express it to you properly. So Dan will help me along with it as well. Because you know the story a lot, I believe too, right, Dan?
I've heard it before.
Yeah. A lot of you guys have probably heard it. It's just now you're hearing it in the context of what we've been talking about, and I think that's in order to put our spin on it.
And it's all such an amazing tribute to Herodotus because he gives us this in full color in a way we couldn't do in the 7th century BC.
Right.
Because nobody was writing like this.
No, you're right.
Yeah, I hope he's truthful, but he is a great storyteller.
He is a good storyteller. I mean, and the story just meanders. You know, this part of the story has been this, and then before that, he'll be talking about Egypt for, you know, 5 pages. And then, by the way, this is what Cyrus is up to. Cyrus is definitely some character, and he's one of those, he's like a clever, he's clever too. So, and we know Croesus was this rich guy, right? Richest Croesus must have been a topic in the ancient world. And I think I've said this before, and I'll say it again, because Herodotus tells us there's all these things at the oracles with, you know, donated by Croesus, and they're all like magnificent. So they must have just, you know, seen all this stuff in them. But this Croesus guy was rich. So some of the stories, I'm surely became stories, but some of it was based in truth. Just like Midas, King Midas, had a lot of gold in Lydia area, just like Croesus is there, same area, a lot of gold.
Yeah. In Sweden, there is a children cartoon that is a comic and some movies, and it's extremely popular and super Swedish, so it can't be exported. It's about small bear named Bamse, who gets super strong if he eats the special honey that his grandmother makes for him.
Okay.
And one of the main villains is a terrible capitalist. He's like trying to buy everything. And his name is Croesus Mouse.
Oh, man, that's great.
So that's when I first got into contact with this name, Croesus.
Oh, since you were a little kid?
Yeah, since I was like 3 years old.
Oh, it was a cartoon when you were little. Oh, that's amazing.
So the cartoon is pretty left-wing, so to speak. So capitalists are super bad. and this nice bear with the super strength. He's like caring for everybody, wants everything to be equal. He's a socialist, pretty much.
Nice. And Croesus the mouse is the capitalist rich money grubber.
Yes. Terrible guy. So that's what I learned when I was a child.
I think Megacles is more your like money grubber. Ah, you're Megacles from the Greeks, you know? Croesus was just so freaking rich. He's just like, I'm so rich here. Have this, have that. He's like, yeah, he'd be like Uncle Duck, you know, the duck diving into all the riches.
Yes.
But hubris. Of course, the Greeks love their hubris. And Croesus, now we know that Cyrus is the, you know, overthrown the Persians. I'm sorry, the Medes, right? So now he's taken over the Median Empire. And Croesus had a deal with Astyages. They were even, they married each other's children, right? They had treaties.
Yes.
Sealed with marriage. But now, you know, he's not the king anymore. Cyrus is. So, you know, basically that treaty doesn't necessarily stand. And because they had set their boundary at the Halys River. And if you recall, they had the Battle of the Eclipse where they, you know, they decided, the Medes and the Lydians decided they couldn't beat each other.
Back in 585.
Correct. So now they're, you know, that, and that was Croesus' father that was in that. And they made that deal. And Croesus may have been at that battle if he was young. Anyhow, that was the deal. But Croesus is going to think about breaking the deal. He loves the, like I said, he goes to these oracles. So he wanted to go to the oracles and find out what he should do. And this story is kind of famous, but why he chose the Oracle of Delphi, and I'll tell you why. So what he did...
Oh, maybe because it's the greatest scam ever.
Oh, it's such a scam. We already just said that, you know, that those guys from the Alchemate were, you know, they're already in with them. Such a scam. And you're going to find out later, like, literally... things that they actually, you know, if you wanted something. And just, I know I keep talking to people about my Assassin's Creed Odyssey. There's a whole thing with the cult of Cosmos has the, you know, they keep the Pythian, the priestess. They make her say things that she didn't want to say and do things. So kind of based in the truth. So anyway, Croesus wants to know which is the best oracle. So he sends people out to all the different oracles, and he says, when you get there, let me, you know, when you're there, so that he knows that they're there. He counted the days or whatever. He said, to ask the oracle what I'm doing at the time. And if they can tell you exactly what I'm doing, then I'll think that oracle's good. And I don't know about you, but usually those kind of oracles, right, like fortune tellers and stuff, they don't like that, right? Like, if you're such a fortune teller, what's going to be the lottery number tonight? When they're, oh, that's not how it works. I guess the Oracle of Delphi was okay with it. This is what he was doing. He was testing them by doing these odd things. And what he did on the day that he would have been at the Oracle of Delphi, he took a tortoise and a lamb and he ripped them up himself and he boiled them in a brass pot with a brass lid on it. So when they went there, the Pythoness answered in a rhyme, probably rhymed in Greek. I can count the sands, and I can measure the ocean. I have ears for the silent, and I know what the dumb man meaneth. Lo, on my sense there striketh the smell of a shell-covered tortoise, boiling now on a fire with the flesh of a lamb in a cauldron. Brass is the vessel below, and brass the cover above it.
That was terribly spot on.
Yeah, dead on. So they must, you know, mustn't be fake or... I mean, who knows what this story, conjecture could be. I mean, if that actually happened, maybe, you know, somebody was a spy. Who knows?
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
I don't think it could be a spy, though, because he would have had to do is say, like, well, it's going to take 5 days for them to get to there, 10 or whatever it is. And then that day he does it. And then they'd have to come back and say, you know, well, this is what they said. And he's, oh, that's I boiled the turtle in a...
Makes you wonder what he did on the other days.
Right?
Like, I have to do something super weird every day.
Well, it's funny because Herodotus does say there was another oracle that got her right, too, and he was doing something different, but he doesn't know what it was. You really have to read him. He's so good. So, make a long story short, he believes the oracle, that the oracle of Delphi is the one to go to. Goes to the oracle. He sends another, you know, messengers, and he asks them, should he invade, you know, should he attack Persia? Should he, you know, go to war with Persia? And they say, basically says, if you attack Persia, you will destroy a mighty empire. He says, oh, that sounds pretty good, right? So he's thinking about, yeah, probably do this. You know, the oracle said I should do it. He says, I'm going to try one more time. So he goes back and he asks her again, you know, should he, you know, oh, he asks her another question. He sends them and he says, will my kingdom be of long duration? You know, so I figures if he was going to lose, right, he would be. He says, wait till the time when a mule is the monarch of Media. Then thou, delicate Lydian, away to the pebbles of Hermes. Haste, oh, haste thee away, nor blush to behave like a coward. Croesus figures, well, mule. Well, it's never going to be king of Media, so I'm probably good. No mules, right? But obviously Cyrus is like a mule because he's, you know, in this era talking about people, because he's half Persian and half Median. The oracle was, he's being tricked, according to Herodotus anyway.
It sounds like a typical ambiguous oracle answer.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And apparently this oracle also told him to find the, get allied with the strongest power in Greece. And he doesn't go to Athens at all because he knows what's going on with Pisistratus at the time. So this is like corresponding to what's happening. This is probably like all this is happening like 546, you know, around middle of the 540s. So he tells him to get allies, get the number one power in Greece. And so Herodotus tells us that previously, a little while ago, Sparta had sent a mission to Lydia to buy gold to make a statue of Apollo with it. And Croesus was saying, you crazy Spartans, you could take it, just have it. So they got the gold for free, and Herodotus says it was still there in his day. Croesus sends a mission to Sparta, and the Spartans are very happy to say, yeah, we'll be your ally. They're happy because they say, you think we're the number one power, and they were happy about the time that he gave them the gold for free. So now he's got his allies. He also has Egypt for an ally. He starts recruiting mercenaries. This is the way the Lydians fight. We mentioned their main troops were heavy cavalry. And then they would have had Greeks from the Ionian cities as soldiers too, because they were vassals to them at the time. And they would also hire mercenaries. And they did have allies in Egypt and again in Sparta, but they didn't have those Egyptian or the Spartan allies at this time when he makes his invasion and he crosses the Halys River.
That's not a good strategy. You should wait for your allies, right?
You would think, but I guess he felt that, I don't know, it's a good point. He got his mercenaries, he got his allies, but he crossed the river. And you know what? It's funny because one of his advisors, he told him they shouldn't attack the Persians at all. Basically, he says that you're going to make war against men who wear leather trousers, and they have all their things in leather, and they don't eat what they want. They have to eat from this crappy soil. They don't drink wine. They don't have the figs. They don't have honey. So if you conquered them, what are you going to get? You're not going to get anything. They don't have anything. But if they conquer you, you lose everything. And once they get a taste of our good stuff, they're going to keep such a hold of them, we'll never get rid of them. So he says, I'm just thankful for the gods have not put it into the hearts of the Persians to invade us. But he doesn't follow that guy's advice, obviously, and he does cross the Halys. He sacks the city of Pteria, Pteria, and he sells all the inhabitants into slavery.
Uh-oh, Cyrus won't be happy about this.
Right. And Pteria is not like a village. It's like, you know, it's like the regional capital kind of thing. So he was like, yep, this is happening.
This is extremely ballsy. But on the other hand, we haven't seen Cyrus do anything super amazing yet, except conquer Media. But
yeah, that's a really good point.
People weren't too happy with the... Yeah, so he's not the super great general he will become.
That's true. And then so at this point, you know, it seems like Croesus is a little nervous. He checks with his oracles a couple of times. He tries to get his ducks in a row. But I think he also figured maybe I better do this now before he gets. There's a lot of theories, too. Some people say, like I said before, he's an ally, right, of the Medes. Now he overthrew the Medes. So maybe he's supposed to, you know, do something with that. And he's allied with the Babylonians. But Nabonidus is in Taima in Saudi Arabia. In the Arabian Peninsula.
And Belshazzar won't be of any use.
Right. So I guess maybe he just figured strike now, you know? It was the time to do it. And it might not have been the worst idea because, you know, he took the city.
So it's a preemptive strike against the rising power of Persia.
Exactly. So Cyrus makes his move and he's going to come and take back his city and fight. Sometime around this time, not exactly sure, we're not exactly when, but in this in-between time here, Cyrus reaches out to the Ionian Greek cities and asks for their help against, you know, Lydia. And they don't know Cyrus yet, and they know this guy, and they're like, you know, he says, you know, I'll take, you know, you'd be just like you are with them, you'd be with us. And they're like, no. And surely there must have been Ionian Greeks in the fight. So Cyrus comes. And they fight out in some plains outside of Pteria where, he had crossed the Halys. And they fight all day, Herodotus tells us, and they fight to a draw. So, obviously, the Lydians could fight and the Persians could fight. So, Croesus retreats back to Sardis. And he figures, this is probably fallish because it's winter's coming. And he figures, well, you know, Cyrus isn't going to come here. It's winter coming. I'm just going to let the mercenaries go for the season, let my troops go for the season, and then I'll just hole up here. And then when the next campaigning season comes back, we'll get those Spartans together, get those Egyptians up, and we'll take care of these Persians. Everything will be fine. You know this part of the story?
Yeah, that's classic ancient warfare, right? Campaigning season is over. We'll do this next year.
Right.
It's like the annual Assyrian campaign. When it's over, we'll just do it next year.
Right. But Cyrus, we know, is not your average. That's why he's so good, right? He decides to pursue. And unbeknownst to Croesus, he has pursued and he follows their army back. Like I said, he's released his mercenaries. He released all of his soldiers. And they're outside of Sardis. But still, the Lydians could fight. They have their heavy cavalry. Do you know this? What happens next?
No, tell me.
I'll tell you. Tell everybody. So Harpagus is with them. Remember Harpagus? He's the guy whose son got eaten, and Cyrus used him to overthrow the Medes. He was a Mede.
Yeah, can't forget Harpagus.
Yeah, poor Harpagus. He's still with us, and he says he sees the cavalry, and he says, "This is what we're going to do. We're gonna put our cavalry on the camels, the pack animals, because horses don't like camels, and we're gonna charge with them, and that'll freak out their horses. So that's what they did, and it worked, and they won outside the Sardis. Regarding that, I listened to a podcast a while ago. It's pretty good, The History of Persia. And he talks about it in the episode, and he says in the episode he's talking about it, he says, I don't know if that's true. Then in the next episode, he says, you know, I got a call from a listener who knows a lot about horses and et cetera, et cetera. And apparently, yes, if horses are not familiar with camels, like if they knew them, you know, they kind of knew camels, like dogs and cats could get along. But if they haven't, they get freaked out by camels. So that's a true thing, and that really could happen.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the story. So he goes and he holds himself up Sardis and preparing for a siege. He figures he'll be fine. And then he reaches out to the Spartans. Hey, I need my help. But what were the Spartans doing? They were having the Battle of the Champions.
Hang on, Croesus. We'll be there a bit later. Oh, we just lost 300 guys.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll find out. Maybe they would have came. So the Sardis is quite a fortress, apparently. It's walled on all the sides. And, of course, there's one side that has a sheer mountain cliff, that kind of thing. Not really walled, but you might not notice it. Cyrus tells his soldiers some, you know, to the effect of whoever finds a way in here will be, you know, majorly rewarded. And so one soldier sees a Lydian soldier dropped his helmet somewhere over on that side where it's just not that defended and walled, and he climbs down to get it. And then he sees that, oh, we can climb up. So the Persians go over there, they climb up that side where the guy dropped his helmet, and they immediately take the city pretty much right away. It was only like under siege for 14 days.
Well, that's record speed.
Yeah, because of that guy dropping his helmet. Yeah, because that could have been a whole thing. So, Cyrus obviously knew stuff, but he was also a gambler. But, I mean, maybe he had an in. And, you know, I'm of the camp that Cyrus was in, like an intelligence guy, just like Nebuchadnezzar. Like he was like the art of war. Don't go to war unless you think you're going to win. And have all your, you know, if you want to call them dirty tricks, but all's fair in love and war. You have all your shit in order. Like, you're going to be there with a small army. You're going in the winter, you know, this kind of stuff. So anyway, he took the city in 14 days. There's a kind of a funny story about that, too. What happens when he takes a city? There's a soldier that's about to kill Croesus. He doesn't know who Croesus is. And did we talk about it? I think we did, that Croesus has a son who's mute.
Oh, remind us.
So remember, Croesus' one son dies is because he had a son that was mute. And I believe that was the older son, but he was mute. So he could never be, he never talked. And so he couldn't be the king. So they had that other son, but he never let him go boar hunting or anything. Or he never let him go to war. But he went boar hunting and that guy killed him by accident. So now Croesus lost his only, you know, heir son, but he had this mute son. Never said a word ever. So the soldier comes in about to stab Croesus with a spear, and guess what happens?
Tell me.
The mute son speaks.
What does he say?
Man, don't kill us. It's Croesus.
Well, that's a good time to speak if you never did before.
I know. Man, do not kill Croesus. It was the first time and he was ever spoken in his life, and Herodotus tells us that he was able to speak after that.
That's a bit late, but at least he saved his father.
Yeah. So now Cyrus has Sardis and Croesus. So you know what he does next?
No. Tell me.
Well, he's going to burn up Croesus. He's going to put him out of fire and burn him.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. So he puts him on the fire. He lights the fire, and Croesus says, remembers Solon, what Solon told him. Remember Solon?
No.
When Solon told them. So Solon had told them a long time. This is the thing with us and Herodotus. You know, it's like I'm telling a decade at a time, and Herodotus is like mixing this all together, and then it comes through. So at the time, we had Solon, from Athens was traveling. He went to Lydia in his travels. He met Croesus, and he had this conversation with Croesus about who was the most happiest person that he ever knew. Croesus asks him, and Solon tells him these one guy who, you know, they died at the end, and this one, that one. But the bottom line was, you can't know a man's happiness until he's lived his entire life, because fate could just change it at the last minute. Thus, Croesus is like, I was about to become a mighty empire, and I was going to keep this forever, but now I'm lost, right? And I'm standing on this thing, and he realizes it, and he's like mumbling about it, he's talking about it, and he's yelling to Apollo, like, I gave you all this gold. I did all this stuff, all these, you said, you know, yours, Oracle was the best, and I die. This is terrible. Like, this sucks, right? Apparently, Cyrus hears it. Someone of his people hears it. And Cyrus is like, oh, no, put that out. I want to talk to him. I want to talk to this Croesus guy. But he can't put the fire out. It's already going. So Croesus is about to burn up. But then the skies open up and it rains. Must have been Apollo, right? Puts out the fire.
Oh, nice work, Apollo.
So now Croesus lives. And they have this, you know, speeches and stuff, et cetera, et cetera. And then Cyrus takes Croesus as an advisor.
That would never have happened to an Assyrian king.
I highly doubt it. We never even hear about Assyrian kings' advisors. But remember, Assyrian kings, I said he's kind of like Art of War. You know, the Chinese would do that. Remember, they were going to pickle a guy, and then they didn't pickle him.
Yeah.
So Cyrus, and it's also a theme in Herodotus. This may not really be true that he did. We don't know. We don't have, like, historical record of it besides Herodotus. As Herodotus does use the literary trick or the literary whatever you call it of the wise advisor. He's got wise advisors in different categories throughout the book. So whether it's true or not, that's Herodotus' story, and that's the story you guys need to know if you want to know about what happened with Cyrus and Croesus.
So Croesus will still be in our story.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's coming up, and then we talk about Ionia. He outlives Cyrus.
I actually heard about Croesus' death in Herodotus today, but we'll save that for later.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course we will. We've still got lots more about Croesus and Cyrus. But I still want to tell you about this situation. It's going to come full circle, baby. You know how I say there's always something I have to say in this podcast? So this just cracks me up. Cyrus says to Croesus, like, you would have a wish. Like, what would you wish? What do you want? Like, you know. So Cyrus says, I want to go back to the, you know, Oracle and say, like, WTF. Like, what? I asked you these questions. I gave you all this stuff. Why did this happen to me? So at some point, I guess he goes to the back to the Oracle, and he sends a messenger. He talks to them. And he, you know, says, like, I gave you all this stuff and yada, yada. And they said back to him, like, as if the priest has talked to the god. Well, this is what Apollo says. He says to him, my hands were tied. I had to do it anyway. But because you did everything, you know, you gave me these things and you were pious towards me, I delayed your judgment, what was going to happen, by 3 years. And the reason, that this happened, do you know why?
No.
Gyges.
What?
Gyges. Because Croesus is Gyges's, like, scion, right? And I think it's the fifth generation. And because when it happened at the time, and like I said, Herodotus opens with Gyges, basically the story of, you know, how he took over the monarchy from the previous king of Lydia. And so they said, so when he became the king, Gyges did, he was cursed that on the fifth generation that he would lose the, you know, that would be the end of his dynasty. So Croesus had nothing to do with it, really. He was just cursed from birth.
Oh, that's sad.
I know. I need to laugh, but, you know, honestly, Dan, I really believe, they really believed a lot of this stuff in those days. They really, really did.
Yep.
You know, like, we had the curse of the Alcmonids. I mean, these are like, this would be like, you know, for like major leaders today, like, believe in this stuff. Like, well, we can't, you know, have babies with this guy because he's cursed because 50 years ago they killed these people. So they believed it, and because of Gyges, Croesus is out, but at least he didn't burn. And Apollo says, I gave you 3 years. You're not dead. I put the fire out. And, you know, sorry, bud, but it was the guy, your great-great-great-grandfather Gyges is the one who caused your downfall.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsinis.
Kayla Itsinis. I'm Kayla Itsinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I have to mention this interaction between Cyrus and Croesus.
Oh, please.
When the Persians are sacking the capital of Lydia.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Croesus looks on and Cyrus looks on and Croesus asks, "O king, am I to say to you now what is in my mind or keep silence?" And Cyrus said, "Oh, you can speak." And Croesus asked, "Yonder multitude, what is this whereon they are so busily engaged?" And Cyrus looks at the carnage and says, "They are plundering your city and carrying off your possessions, nah?" But Croesus looks on Cyrus and says, "No, it's not my city nor my possessions, for I have no longer any share of all this. It is your wealth that they are ravishing."
Yeah.
And Cyrus just realizes, it's true.
Making a point there, aren't you? That's there. He's right off the bat. He's the wise advisor. He is one of Cyrus's favorite advisors. Becomes at this point. So we're going to segue into what happens in Ionia, but I will say that now that it's taken, Cyrus does go, and that's why we can end this episode, I think. So now after they lost, the Ionians come to Cyrus and say, hey, we'll take that deal you gave us. And then Cyrus tells him a story. He tells him a story about a piper who was walking along the ocean and he was blowing to the fish and wants the fish to dance. And the fish won't dance. So the piper gets a net and he throws a net into the ocean and all the fish are dancing. And he says, "You're like those fish. When I piped to you and asked you to dance, you didn't want to do it. But now I have you in my net. And oh, you're happy to dance now. So now you're going to do what I say." And that's how that went. And then we could talk about that in the next episode because there's a whole bunch of different Ionian cities, picks off. And Herodotus tells us the stories of a couple of them. And I think they're pretty interesting. So I think that could be a whole episode.
All right. So the Ionian cities were all vassals of Croesus.
Yeah, just for historical accuracy, there was two that weren't. And at this moment, I do not recall which two weren't because there's a bunch of them. Because you have the Ionian cities that are Greek, and then you do have these Carian cities. And there's a whole bunch of cities that over the time, I think Miletus was, I'm not sure, I don't want to say. But over the time, if you recall, of the Lydian kings were subjecting these different cities. And now they've all been, finally subjugated by Lydia, and now this Persians come in, and he's going to see if he could subjugate them himself now, since they decided that they didn't want to dance.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. So let's dig into that one next time, because this episode will go forever otherwise.
In another discussion between Cyrus and Croesus before they leave Sardis for Persia, Cyrus is asking Croesus what fault he saw in that plundering of Sardis. So Croesus replies, "Since the gods have given me to be your slave, it is right that if I have any clear sight of wrong done, I should declare it to you. The Persians are violent men by nature, and if you then suffer them to seize and hold great possessions, you may expect that he who has won the most will rise in revolt against you. Now, therefore, do this, if what I say finds favor with you. Set men of your guard to watch all the gates. Let them take the spoil from those who are carrying it out, and say that it must be paid as tithe to Zeus. Those shall you not be hated by them for taking their wealth by force, and they for their part will acknowledge that you act justly, and will give up the spoil willingly. So, once again, Croesus is giving great advice to Cyrus.
Yeah.
And then he gets all the money, of course.
That would be the plan, right? So he puts the guy in charge. He puts this guy Pactes in charge, collecting the taxes.
Yeah, so he's pretty much a satrap then in Sardis.
Yeah.
But we don't have satrapies yet.
No. They don't really call them that.
Like the king of kings term.
Yes.
The actual development of the satrapies is not very clear. So there might be a pre-satrapy thing going on here.
Yeah, I think it's what you call it. They probably were in a way a satrapy. Like even the Assyrians, some of them were sort of like satrapies, you know?
Yeah.
Like they sort of set this empire up. The Assyrians did, and the Babylonians had it. And then because, you know, sometimes they'd put a eunuch in charge, and then sometimes they would just put a person in charge. And that's what satrapies were like, a person in charge.
So pretty much Cyrus has control of all of Lydia. Lydia is now a part of his kingdom. He put Pactes in charge of Lydia. The Ionian Greeks are vassals of Cyrus now, right?
No. Well, they said no, so they're gonna have to fight it out.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
They said they said we'll take the original deal, which was a better deal. They're more autonomous. And then he said, no, now you're going to be like, you're vassals, like basically what Herodotus would call slaves.
Maybe just conquer them to make them a part of the Persian Empire, not vassals.
Exactly. He was going to conquer them.
Is he going to do it, or is Pactus going to do it?
We're going to find out on the next episode.
Oh, great.
So let's close there and talk about it. And 2 weeks from now, I'll have it all ready for you guys. Hey, in between those 2 weeks, though, remember to check out next week. We'll have some episode of What's New in History. And if I don't, I'll be in trouble. So every other week, we have What's New in History. And every other week, we have Fan of History, which is counting back forward the decades.
Yes.
Yeah. Until next time, check out our Facebook page. Check out Dan's Instagram page. How do you spell that, Dan?
Dan Horning and an umlaut above the O.
Yes. And check out our Facebook page. Like I already said, but you can message me on there. Message me any ideas you have, any thoughts. If I effed anything up, tell me. And we'll catch you next time. We're going to talk about the Ionians in the previous Lydian Empire that are now in conflict with Cyrus the Great.
And if you're one of our Swedish listeners, you should check out Nu blir det historia, my new Swedish history podcast.
Nice.
Yes, and next time you come over the pond, Bernie, we'll bring Cornelia, my co-host, onto Fan of History as well.
Nice.
Yeah, remember, she was the one who read Alice in Wonderland.
Yes, I do. I remember. Yes.
Okay. Until next time.
Until next time. Cheers.
Oh, the poor Aeonians.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just $1 an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.